This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow.
They say we're young and we don't know. Won't find out till we grow.
We've all had those moments of deja vu where something seems so familiar. Well, some people actually do experience that overwhelming sense of familiarity over and over again, day in and day out. Now imagine having that feeling so intensely that novel experiences like traveling to new countries or seeing new movies seem like old news. To them, every day is like Bill Murray's in Groundhog Day. It's called déjà vu. Scientists think the phenomenon probably stems from a disruption in the part of the brain responsible for recollection. Here to talk about it is my guest, Dr. Christopher Moulin. He's a neuropsychologist and a lecturer in cognitive neuropsychology at the University of Leeds in England. He joins us by phone. Thanks for working late to talk with us, Dr. Moulin.
No trouble.
All right, now, to describe a typical déjà vu case, is someone who thinks they've seen everything all the time? They've been there before?
Well, it's almost all the time. So we describe it as being persistent, but in fact, it's not really for everything that happens in their life. So let me characterize a case. They might something might arrive in the mail for them, a letter from an old friend or something like that, and they would believe that they'd already received that letter before. Their wife might bring them the newspaper, and they'd think that they'd already read the newspaper before. They'd refuse to watch the television because they'd think that they'd watched, you know, whatever was showing on the television at that time before. Probably if they received some news or had a conversation, they might complain as well that they'd had that conversation before. But it's not really the case that they wouldn't refuse to eat, or they wouldn't, you know, get dressed or have a shave or things like that. The routine things in life, they don't think they've already done before. But, yes, they kind of walk down the street and they think it's the same bird singing the same song in the same tree and so on.
So if they went into a restaurant to eat dinner, they'd see the same people. They thought, oh, I saw them last time I was here.
Yes, probably. But we think that obviously it'd be an overwhelming sensation if it was everything like that. It just seems to be the things that most kind of capture their sensation that most lead to this problem. So it's people that knock on the door, for instance. So a stranger knocks on the door trying to sell something. Then one of the patients I worked with thought that it was somebody he knew and that, you know, could explain what he did for a living and so on and so forth.
But what if they're with someone who's been with them, you know, all day, and they say, well, I've seen this person earlier in the day, and the witness says, well, I was with you all day. You couldn't have seen that person. I didn't see that person.
Right.
How do they react to something like that?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting part. I mean, this is one of the exciting things, I guess, about psychology, that you'd most of the time we're kind of we can be manipulated by reason and by the experience of other people around us, and maybe we can reconstruct events to our kind of our rationale and our way of thinking about things. But these people have such a strong sensation that they're immune to that kind of reasoning. So, for instance, if their wife says, well, you know, you've already seen this person, or you can't have seen this person before, then they won't respond to that. They just have such a strong sensation that they've encountered things before that they can't escape that.
Mm-hmm. Would
so they
make
really have the same kind of insight that we have? That's the exciting thing, I think, that when we have déjà vu, it's like a little window into how the mind works, and it's an intriguing, exciting feeling because it lasts for a few seconds maybe, and you have an insight into how your mind can kind of play tricks on you. It feels like you remember something. It feels like you've encountered it before, but you know that you haven't. But these people don't have that kind of awareness. They don't have that insight. So they don't know that their mind is kind of playing tricks on them.
So would you classify this as an illness then?
We don't go so far as to classify it as an illness. We're not quite sure of the kind of the significance that it has as an illness, but it's quite clear that it's a symptom, and we're kind of describing it as a new sort of symptom that people can get. So it's one of the ways in which memory can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. And how many people do you think have this?
Well, I think it's safe to say it's a really rare condition, but we do think that the more we talk about it, and in fact, the way our papers have been received, our scientific papers, we know that it's probably more common than we first envisaged. but I would still think that there would probably be no more than 100 cases worldwide at any one time. It's not very, very common.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the brain scanning techniques that people use today for experimentation diagnosis, watching the brain light up, can you do that also and try to figure out what's going on in there?
We could do that in theory. In fact, we're kind of at the stage just before doing that. So we have a good idea about where these problems occur in the brain. We would have had a good hunch for a long time because we know that people with temporal lobe epilepsy, which is a form of epilepsy that affects the temporal lobes, and that's a portion of the brain behind the ears, they often experience sensations like this deja vu or like day-to-day deja vu. And we know that these areas of the brain and the temporal lobe are very important for memory and for recollection. So we would have thought it was those kinds of areas. And kind of happily for us, those are the areas where you see kind of damage in the brains of the people that we've managed to look at. So we haven't got them in a scanner doing some kind of memory task and watching the brain whilst they have a sensation of deja vu, but we can look at the structure of the brain and how many cells are in any one area, and from that we can kind of extrapolate and work out that's the area involved.
Do people with deja vu know that they have something unusual going on with them?
Well, they really appear not to know. I mean, that's the main thing. So we describe this as anosognosia. So that means they've got an unawareness of their deficit. And that's really the difference between the deja vu that you and I have and the deja vu that they have. So it's persistent, it's ongoing, and they're not really aware of it. They do show some kind of insight into it every now and then. So, for instance, the first case we worked with, his wife was very good at challenging him and trying to reason with him and find out the rationale for his sensations and believing that things had repeated. And as happened very often, he complained that he had watched a television program before. And she said, well, it's not possible. This is the first time it's ever been on television. And he said, well, I've definitely seen it before. So she said, well, okay, if you've seen it before, go on, what happens next? And he said, well, how should I know? I've got a memory problem. So he had some kind of awareness that he had memory difficulties, but he couldn't kind of come to terms with this ongoing sensation that he was remembering things.
Well, will patients sometimes make up stories to cover their own illness?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing. So that's actually a more widespread and fairly common memory problem that people will kind of invent is a bit of a hard, nasty word because that sounds like these people are lying. But what they do is they kind of fabricate stories that justify the memories that they're having, and we call that confabulation. So that's quite a common thing. People have gaps in their memory and they kind of make up stories to fill in those gaps. And that's exactly what these people do. So if you challenge them and say, well, how can you have known this piece of news that already happened? They'll say, well, I got up really early and I left the house very quietly without my wife knowing, and I got to the news agents and I read the newspaper as it was being unloaded from the lorry, and then I came back to the house and came back to bed, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So they invent a story that kind of justifies this really strong sensation they've got of remembering.
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds to me, when I was reading the research and listening to you now, it sounds to me that this is almost similar to what happens when we dream. You know, we can make up a dream that is so detailed, and we've never been to these places, right?
Yes.
And you can know exactly what the color of the shrubs, what the sidewalk looked like, whatever, wherever you've been, what the people were wearing, it's totally synthesized.
Yes.
Could there be some similarity between the dream center, and I'm just trying to, out on my own here, and what's going on with these people?
Well, it's a very clever point, in fact. Historically, of course, the deja vus that you and I often have, we often interpret them as being material that we've encountered in dreams, or they're kind of vague memories, and it reminds you of a dream, and there's that kind of dreamlike quality. And, in fact, that was Freud's idea about what deja vu was. But it's a bit more technical than that as well, because we do know that the temporal lobes are very, very much involved in those kind of dreamy states. And when we're asleep, we know that the firing in that part of the brain does lead to kind of vivid dreams, the types that you discuss. So there is some kind of link there. And I think it's fair to say that that part of the brain is very involved in those kinds of actions, but it's probably early days in our understanding of both recollection and these kinds of sensations of remembering and our understanding of dreams to go the whole hog and say, well, they are definitely related. But it's a very good point.
Mm. Could there be some place, some sort of buffer in our memory where, you know, the event happens and before you actually analyze it in your brain, it seems to be a memory already?
Right. We don't think so. There are some people that think that's a good account of deja vu and deja vu, but we have some evidence that suggests that's not the case. For instance, with our patients with this problem, they have particular problems with very bizarre items in memory tests. So if we give them very run-of-the-mill, everyday words like mouse, house, car, and so on, then they don't get they don't have any kind of sensation of false memory for those. They don't think they've already seen those words before. But if you give them very striking words like bayonet, pampas, and so on, these are really, really rare words that they wouldn't encounter normally. Now, for you or I, we don't make memory mistakes on those kinds of words because they grab our attention and we think, well, if I'd heard that word or if you'd shown me that word, I'd really remember that, doctor. So we don't make any problems, but they make the problems on those kinds of words. Now, for us, it's hard to imagine why that would be due to some kind of like pathway in the brain or mm-hmm. some little buffer that goes wrong, because you'd have to explain why the buffer was more active for some sorts of words than for other sorts of words. So at Leeds, that's not really the model that we're working with. The other evidence that works against that is for a long time a similar idea was that there might be an optical pathway, and that so some information arrives at one part of the brain quicker than the other part of the brain. Well, we've found deja vu in people who are congenitally blind, so that suggests that it's not to do with optical pathways either.
Dr. Moulin, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Christopher Moulin is a neuropsychologist and lecturer in cognitive neuropsychology at the University of Leeds in England. We're going to take a short break and talk about science and religion. Get your views and the views of two prominent scientists, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.